Ahoy, Vachon. How does the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That, friends, was the voice of one of the more cogent people to walk this earth, Brian Brown, who created the Brown Briefly. And together we, the Brieflies, keep Brian's creative flame alive by bringing to you every week another episode of intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy, always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. But Craig, I have to ask you a question. We've talked about this intelligent discussion thing before. I'm just curious, you know, has Dow or maybe Mayor Nichols or anything made any post-show comments about, you know, the intelligence of our discussions with them? I'm curious what you might be hearing.
Well, yeah, I think that was a bridge too far to ask them to do that. They did say on several occasions that they had a really good time and a fun time and enjoyed our company. But they didn't go so far as to say it was intelligent. They didn't say it was not intelligent. They just didn't address that issue.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll leave it in for now. But, you know, we're still seeking feedback. So, okay, cool. Well, why don't we go ahead and introduce the Brieflies and our guests. Engineering the show from behind the board of the Voice of Vachon's Jean Bosch Broadcast Studio in bustling, bodacious downtown Vachon is Flight Instructor Vachon Airport Commissioner West Texas Roughneck and current treetop flyer Truman O'Brien. Good morning, Truman.
Good morning.
And hey, I have to ask you a question, too. I'm just wondering if we can add another accomplishment to the list. Were you ever involved in the secret spy plane programs, which the CIA last month reported were behind all the UFO sightings in the 50s and 60s?
Well, I can neither confirm nor deny any allegation that I might have been involved, potentially involved in any such discussion. So I'll have to just leave it at that.
It is so hard to interpret, you know, how to react to that confirm or deny thing. Well, let's move on. Sitting next to Truman, this is odd. Craig, you have so many accomplishments that I set them up in a spreadsheet with an AI-based, like, random number generator to kind of mix them up for each show. But right now I'm looking at that. It doesn't seem to be working. All I'm getting right now is a notice from Siri that you may have been either a former brain surgeon or possibly a facial hair grooming instructor. Is Siri on the right track here? Are you not disclosing some things that we should know about?
Actually, I can neither confirm nor deny. No, but I can tell you that neither of those is true. Although you have given me an entree to mention another one of my jobs.
Oh, okay, excellent. Bring it on.
I had a foray into military intelligence in 1987. When I represented a company that had designed sensitive compartmented information facilities, commonly
SCIF.
Referred to today as a SCIF, yes. They were the experts on making mobile and permanent rooms un-eavesdroppable. I had a connection with a full bird colonel who, curiously, whenever I called him in D.C., his assistant would put me on hold, and I'd see him walk in the door in my office in Seattle.
Oh.
So it was a little scary.
Yeah.
But they gave me some kind of minor designated security clearance to deal with that, because that's when those rooms were just in their sort of incipiency. And it was very fascinating technology. So,
was that kind of like the Get Smart cone of silence?
Yeah, it was just like that. They had multiple ways of preventing people from eavesdropping in those rooms.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, the things we know and the things we don't. Hey, let's also recently return to the Northern Hemisphere and probably still getting used to the idea of walking again on the top half of the planet. Historian extraordinaire, our globe-charting guardian of the galaxy and official party animal, Bruce Hallman. Welcome back to Tuesday, Bruce.
Hey, it's good to be back.
more difficult is to get used to the cold and the rain than it is to walking on the top part of the planet. But it's good to be back.
Okay, well, great to have you here as well. Let's welcome our small talk guest, Vashon Mori Island's newest King County Council member and an affordable housing, labor, and healthcare advocate, who also chairs the King County Regional Transit, Health and Human Services Committees, and also chairs the Board of Health. Welcome, Teresa Mosqueda.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor. And I might venture to say, I don't think there is a bridge too far to reach and connect Vashon Mori Island to our King County residents. So I'm honored to be here. And thank you again for the invitation.
Very nice.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you join us today and to dive into some really important things that are on the minds, I know, of our community, as well as on your mind. So it'd be great to explore that. Mine is the voice of Indivisible Vashon and the Vashon Climate Action Group, striving to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate or at least tolerate. If you'd like to strive along with me, join me next Wednesday, not tomorrow, but on the 20th of March at noon at Swiftwater Gallery, where the Vashon to Voters postcard group will meet. Bring yourself and your pen and your postcard stamps if you have them. Everything else is provided. So Swiftwater Gallery right there. Just a short walk from the Jean Bosch downtown studio. All right, we're anticipating that maybe Amy Dreyer could join us. I don't see her on Zoom, and I expect she's not in the studio, so we will miss Amy, but hopefully she can join us at some future time. Okay, per our usual practice, let's take a minute to check in with everybody about what special things you've experienced this past week. Craig, maybe you could start us off.
Yeah, quickly, Truman and I finished up our annual on the airplane, and we only had four large bolts left over. We weren't sure what we were going to do with those, so we set them aside. They're probably not really required.
We don't need those.
We don't need those stinking bolts.
No.
And then I had a wonderful evening at the Coop, again, with the band Rumor Has It, that just... wonderful musicians, every one of them in that group had a really good time that night. So those are probably two of the highlights, along with the continuing remodeling of the kitchen.
Yes. If you own a house.
Yes. Never ending.
All right. Truman, I'm surprised only four bolts left over. That's awesome. What else?
Well, actually, there were a couple of screws too, but we didn't talk about those. It's not important.
They were little.
They were little ones, yeah, so it probably didn't matter.
All right.
No, we did get that finished up, which is a great accomplishment. You know, what this is you actually have to take the airplane apart, basically, and inspect it to make sure that everything is like it should be. And we have an inspection inspector that comes out that's FAA qualified, and he goes through the airplane with us. It's called an owner-assisted annual, but that's done every year. It's quite a process. Wow. The only other exciting thing, I did get to go see Dune 2, which is pretty darn good. I was impressed. My wife did say, you know, I wish they would just make a movie without all these explosions and stuff all the time. So there is that. There are quite a few of those, but it was pretty good, I have to say.
Nice. All right. Hey, Teresa, just how has your week been going? I know things are super busy as a King County Council person because I see your Teresa Tuesdays. But other than that, how's things going for you?
Well, thank you so much for having us again. I am thrilled to be here. The week's been going pretty good. Last week was pretty packed. We are keeping the theme that Councilmember McDermott had with District 8 days, D8 days. So we were very busy last week. We were in White Center. Before that, we were in Burien. And as you all know, in our first month in office, we were on Vashon Mori Island. So we continued that theme. We got to see Malcolm X's opera. That was a really exciting evening. And his daughter, Malcolm X's daughter, was actually in the audience to take questions afterwards. So quite a gem to be able to experience that during Black History Month, and now going into Women's History Month to have his daughter carry out the Q&A, I thought was really a good thread to keep there. So that was a fun way to end our busy week last week.
Wonderful.
Fantastic.
All right. Bruce, welcome back to the cold side of the planet, at least for the moment. How's things going with you?
It's good to be back. And my week has mostly been taken up by sort of adjusting to the time change and then daylight savings time on top of the time change and getting out of shorts and into jeans and you know, tops and all that sort of stuff. When you live for 3 months in shorts and T-shirts, it's a difficult transition. But this weekend is supposed to be 60 degrees, so you never know, right?
Exactly. It's springtime. You know, these are the days you haven't seen one yet since you've been back, but we've seen the days when you have rain and snow and sun all at the same, within the same 24-hour period. So, all right. I have to say that I had probably my first experience out on the water with the Vashon Rowing Club in windy conditions. We got down to the boathouse and the water was fairly flat, but you could look up in the tops of the trees and you could hear the wind coming in. Oh, and depending on which route you took, whether you got exposed to that wind made a big difference in terms of how you could get those oars through the water. Just an hour later, driving back home, full white cap activity out south of Burton Peninsula. So we definitely had a blow come through, and but we were fortunate to get on the water and off before things got crazy. So it's been good. Okay, let's see. Today is a significant day, as are all days. I want to mention it's International Girl Scout Day, but also, as Teresa mentioned, it's Women's History Month. This year's theme is Women Who Advocate for Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. And Teresa, I don't know if you wanted to share any Women's History Month insights with our listeners. I give you that opportunity if you'd like to.
Well, sure. Again, thanks for putting this at the top of the Brown Briefly. I think it's a great way to celebrate all the folks who have been advocating and have come from the island and have fought for more equitable and just community, especially connecting Vashon to King County. Of course, former Senator Sharon Nelson is a resident and a strong advocate for all things just and equitable, both for the environment and for workers. And it's been a pleasure to meet with her over the last few years as I've been going out there. So, you know, thinking about the shoulders that we stand on to fight for a more equitable and just community, economy, and environment, I have to recognize Senator Nelson, of course, Representative Eileen Cody, who is a huge advocate for healthcare. And I had the chance to learn a lot from her and continue to try to weave in health into everything we do. And our very own Representative Emily Alvarado, who really came through for Vashonites in the last budget. And I know we'll talk a little bit about that, the last legislative session wrapping up. But, you know, one exciting opportunity as well outside of the 34th is to highlight Senator Karen Kaiser, another strong advocate for healthcare. And she is announcing that she's no longer going to run for the Senate after an incredible history of working previously with the Washington State Labor Council, where I originally came from. And she is going to retire from the state Senate again. So huge shout out to her. And then in terms of current news, you know, looking forward, as we talked about, it was exciting to see President April Sims from the Washington State Labor Council, AFL-CIO. She got an invitation to go to the State of the Union address with Congresswoman Marilyn Strickland. So to see that connective thread of women standing up for women and keeping that ladder out and then fighting for that more just and equitable society was something that I thought about a lot when I saw her attend the State of the Union last week.
Great. Fantastic. All right. Any other thoughts and ideas about International Women's Month?
Well, I think I need to digress for just a moment and let people know that sometimes during this week, the Girl Scouts are out in front of the pharmacy selling cookies. I gave in here this last weekend and bought myself a bunch of them. And, you know, it's a, you know, you want to support them.
It's kind of like pushing heroin. You know?
Well, it is. I told them just inject it straight into my arm.
Yeah. You just, they hook you. You know, that's the way it is.
All right. Well, a good cause, certainly one that deserves support. I'll mention just a couple things. I do have the great pleasure of working in a community known as Black Pack, and they advocate for communities of color getting registered to vote in important states like Virginia and Ohio. And a woman, Darlene, she's in Virginia. She worked on the staff with Shirley Chisholm's staff, one of the early BIPOC leaders in Congress. Mm-hmm. So it was a wonderful opportunity to meet people who really made that kind of social change and civil rights change happen. But also at the Washington Indivisible Network meeting last night, pictures were shown of our current state House and state Senate and the makeup of those two bodies, and the change of the number of women who are currently representing us in the state of Washington is phenomenal. So just wanted to pass that on.
I'll just add to that, Kevin. It's not so long in our recent history that the Seattle Times headline in 2012 said the state legislature is wealthier, whiter, and older than the general population. So to have come as far as we have in the last 12 years is a remarkable accomplishment. And I really appreciate you bringing that up, because it's not just about, you know, representative democracy. It's about how we make public policies that reflect the communities that we're elected to serve. So thanks for bringing that up.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of bringing other things up, let's dive right into small talk.
Before we do, Kevin, we just had an arrival in the studio.
Oh,
Amy Dreher is here.
Is it somebody we know? Awesome.
Yes. We need to say hi to Amy and to see if I can get the thing moved around here where you folks can see her. There we go. There.
Okay.
And let me get a mic on here for you. Let's see, Amy, you've got the green one. Okay, there you go.
Okay, so hey, Amy, we know that you're returning from travels. You are our Vashon Chamber of Commerce Executive Director, dual-hatted Vashonite and Denverite, and organizer supreme of our Grandest Island Festival of Strawberries. Amy, hey, how's your travels and welcome back? How are you doing?
Yes, hello, hi. I'm so sorry. I did not mean to jump in on the conversation here, but whew, I feel like I'm still traveling, I guess. No, my travels were great, and I was just saying that I appreciate the Seattle airport more and more. I really do. I really do. The more airports I see, the more I appreciate the Seattle airport.
Yeah, I can go there easily. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for a shout out to efficient transportation here in the Northwest. Mm-hmm. So, all right, well, Amy, you're perfect timing, because we're just about to dive into small talk with our guest, Teresa Mosqueda. And Teresa, I was going to ask you, as an Evergreen State College and UW grad, your education is grounded here in the Pacific Northwest. Why don't you let our listeners know a little bit about yourself? I'm curious what motivated you to take this giant step into public service.
Well, thanks again, and great to see everyone. As many folks on this podcast know, we've had the chance to meet over the last year or so. So some of you might be familiar with this story. And for those of you who we haven't had the chance to talk directly with, I'm really glad to be here, and thanks for asking. I did graduate from the Evergreen State College with a master's in public administration with a focus on health policy. And prior to that, as you mentioned, undergrad in University of Washington in international studies. But it was actually getting my undergraduate degree at the University of Washington in Seattle, where I was studying about the Chicanismo movement, Chicano movement, where in the 60s, 70s, Spanish-speaking Latino community members identified as Chicano were really recognizing that a lot of community members, folks of color, Latino members were getting left out of services. And so, as you probably know, that was the impetus to many programs and services that started with the emphasis on serving the community that had been left out. And CMAR, Community Health Centers, which the island is familiar with, has roots in the Chicanismo movement. Rogelio Riojas, again, one of the original founders, still there, was very much interested in making sure that they could step in and step up to serve a largely Spanish-speaking population who had been either priced out of insurance or unable to access additional health coverage and healthcare access. And I started studying CMAR's roots, and I reached out to them, and I actually got an internship at CMAR while I was still finishing my undergrad services. And that ultimately led to a job upon graduation in the fall of 2002, where I had the privilege of serving the Latino Senior Information and Assistance Program. And people probably know about area aging and disability services, where meals are provided and social interaction is provided. And as you're meeting with people, you try to connect them to housing and social services and healthcare services. And it was through running that program for 2 years that you just saw individuals on a one-on-one basis who should have been in retirement, who should have been living their golden years, still working 2 and 3 jobs, and recognizing that they had paid into a community, into a country, but they were still unable to have housing security or food security. That's when really what all I had studied about how systems had left so many community members out, that's where I realized we had to go upstream. So I was so proud to have worked at CMAR and my roots here in the Pacific Northwest, but building on the teachings of my parents, both educators and activists, who constantly told me to kind of challenge the status quo and look upstream and think about how we could be doing things differently and more equitable to the theme of your earlier conversation. I decided to go and get my master's in public administration. And that's where I really had this focus on public policy, right? Because if it was public policy that was leaving people behind in their years that they should be enjoying retirement, it is public policy, if invested right and change, that could be investing in our community from the beginning. And that's where I really went to Evergreen and did a focus on changing systems and changing laws and creating policies that really lift people up upstream. So that's, as you know, why I focus so heavily on creating housing and economic stability and food security and the ability to have good living wage jobs, access to a union, and to be able to have walkable, livable, thrivable, affordable communities is a way to invest in people's health from birth through their eldest age. And to me, that's investing in our health of the individuals and the health of our community. And that requires public policy investment. So it all kind of connects back to health and those original experiences that I had at CMAR.
Right. Bruce, I think you had some questions for...
Yeah, I do. That's an impressive sort of background, Teresa. And added to it, you know, you were the director of the Children's Alliance legislative effort. You're government affairs director of the Washington State Labor Council of the AFL-CIO. You've been a city council, Seattle City Council member, and now a King County Council member. You've got a tremendous sort of background. I mean, out of all of that, what's been the most rewarding thing that you've accomplished? And then following on with that, if you would, how does that translate into what you see yourself doing with the King County Council?
No small question there. Thank you so much for that question. And again,
the big ones,
for the
right?
opportunity to connect all of the work that we've talked about. You know, Amy and I have talked about economic stability and the ability for small businesses to open. Kevin and I have talked about how we create a lasting environment for future generations. And by acting now where, you know, we've lost time and we've lost opportunity, we have to be accelerating that. So I appreciate that this kind of answer is able to weave together all of those issues that I've worked on in the past. And I think connect with members of the island, residents of the island, and all of you about investing in our health. You're right. I did work at the Children's Alliance. I was the lead policy staffer on health policy and then the lead government relations person as we were implementing Apple Health. And now people know the word Apple Health, but at the time we actually came up with that term in the middle of legislative session with Representative Frank Chopp. And we were trying to expand Medicaid and a state children's health insurance program, CHIP. And this was just at the cusp of prior to the Affordable Care Act passing, we were doing everything that we could to get all kiddos covered. I mean, in 2007 and 8 and 9, we were implementing Apple Health for Kids and fighting with actually what was then a Republican majority because of this so-called roadkill caucus that was trying to roll back the expansion of health coverage for kiddos. The argument being, if you're a child, you really should be able to have access to healthcare that determines your health outcomes for the rest of your life and your ability to have economic stability. So it is a good investment for the entire community if we invest in kiddo health. those are the issues that we were fighting on implementing prior to the Affordable Care Act. And then once the Affordable Care Act passed, or Obamacare passed, I worked on implementation of that as well through the Washington Community Health Plan, Community Health Plan of Washington, I should say. And then while at the Washington State Labor Council, AFL-CIO, I served on the Health Exchange Board, where we implemented the Affordable Care Act. I bring this up because I want to make sure that we continue to illustrate the need to fight for that health insurance card, right? That plastic insurance card that we want everybody to have in their wallets for themselves, for their dependents. And we also know that health insurance is only about 5% of what makes us actually healthy. And the rest is, do you have housing? Do you have a good job? Is it a job that you feel respected in? Can you speak up if there are toxic people or toxic environments? Do you have the ability to go out and have respite, go see nature? Can you travel and enjoy life and not just be living to work? All of these things actually affect our physical health as well as our mental health. And once you start thinking about the ways in which public policies and housing, transportation, education, job creation, all of those policies actually affect an individual's health and population health, to me, then it became clear that I wanted to continue to serve and fight for everybody to have access to that health insurance card. But in order to create healthier populations, I needed to continue to work on public policies upstream. So that's why the Washington State Labor Council, AFL-CIO, was an opportunity to actually try to lift all boats by increasing worker protections and worker wages, everything from farm workers to hotel workers, construction workers, office workers, right? If we invest in people's ability to speak up and have good living wage jobs, it actually improves the population's health overall. So I did that at the Washington State Labor Council. And then as you can easily tell, transportation, housing, economic stability incentives, and education incentives, these are core public policy strategies that one could work on at any level of government. And I chose the city of Seattle first, and clearly then King County. So to your last part of your question, why King County and where is the connective thread? You know, it is going to be my prime objective to make sure that we are continuing to invest in population health by protecting and investing in our public health systems, but also by investing in things like transportation so that people have self-determination and can get to a doctor's appointment if they need to, no matter if they live on an island or not, making sure that people have access to housing and affordable housing, workforce housing, and that gets back to economic stability, making sure that employers have the ability to open up their own small business and have greater self-determination by having a trained and accessible workforce that requires people to have housing near places of employment. And that improves our population health. And I'll end with this. I know that was a long answer, but if folks are familiar with Stephen Beshrushka, he's a professor at the University of Washington. Oh, good. I'm seeing some nods. Okay. We got some Professor Beshrushka fans here. But he teaches about the health Olympics, right? And that if you compare countries that have the widest income gaps, they actually have the worst health outcomes. So the United States, clearly with our income inequality that we experience here, has some of the worst health care outcomes compared to other countries with similar economies. And so if you look at places like Spain and Italy, and I'm going to forget some of the other ones, but clearly Japan, that have smaller gaps between their wealthiest and their lowest wage workers, they actually have improved maternal health, infant health, they have longer life expectancy, and they have less dollars overall that they're putting into their healthcare systems. And this is actually true of Cuba as well. Cuba does better than the United States on the scale of the health Olympics. And it is important to think about how we create more equitable communities and societies if we're going to invest in the health and the longevity of our community members. So if we're not doing it for our own, for society's interest, let's do it for our own self-interest to try to live longer and have our babies and elders live longer too.
Wow. Right. Craig, I know you have brought healthcare and had CMAR folks join us here on the Briefly. I don't know if you had any specific follow-ups for Teresa regarding healthcare.
I do to a certain degree. First of all, I want to thank you very much, Teresa, for being here today. You're a great representative of Vashon. And that answer, which I didn't think was particularly long in light of how complex the question was, You have raised the level of intelligent discussion, I think, all by yourself on the Briefly show.
So you're too kind.
You're now we can say that at the beginning without feeling guilty. But as you point out, healthcare has been a major theme of your public service, and healthcare is a major deal on Vashon. We have had gaps and issues and whatnot. Hard to get health care, hard to get off the island, as you just pointed out. That is a problem related to health care. We have CMAR, as you know, and you worked for the Vashon Healthcare District, multiple organizations that provide health care and wellness care, and most recently the Seattle Indian Health Board. Now, focusing specifically on Vashon Moria Islands, do you have any particular topics that you are focused on for Vashon and Moria Island?
Well, thanks so much to the health board who had me out there recently, the hospital district who had me out for a swearing in of new board members, also for the time that they've taken to help orient me into the work that they're doing. They, among many entities, are creating a safety net, strengthening a safety net that's available on the island. You mentioned the Seattle Indian Health Board, and we had the chance to walk through their existing building and see the vision of what the renovation will bring, not just services, clearly for the Native and Indigenous population, but adding capacity to the island as well with additional health providers there and creating holistic care that actually helps people get stable and rehabilitated in the long term. It gives me goosebumps thinking about the type of services that will be offered there and the ways in which they're integrating traditional healing and Western medicine, which again will be available to community members, as they noted. I also want to thank the chief, the fire chief, who has had me out over the last year and hearing more about the ways in which they're trying to work with the mobile integrated health program and the fire department they recently launched, as the Beachcomber noted, an example of what can be done on the island to think about how we can respond to emergency situations and get to people quickly. And as you noted as well, CMAR Community Health Center stepping in when other clinics have made decisions to step out. This, I think, helps to weave together a safety net. In addition to all of these services, though, I think that public health, Seattle King County, needs to be that backstop, right? There is a reason why public health clinics are so important. They provide services where the private sector and nonprofit sector is not able to step in. It is not a money-making line of business, and that is exactly what we need government services for. And we need to have, in my opinion, the ability to lift up this brick and mortar and workforce investment that King County has made into our local region and put a spotlight on it and celebrate it. We in the Pacific Northwest, because of King County's investments in public health and specifically the partnership that we've had in co-located facilities like you have on Vashon and Moria Island, have been able to respond to this pandemic that started in 2020 with I think, more improved health outcomes than we have seen in other places in the country. We were able to respond quicker with standing up testing sites and then ultimately vaccination sites because we had a footprint in community. So while other jurisdictions have gone the way of sort of outsourcing or downsizing their footprint, I think we have something to be really proud of in the Pacific Northwest, of the clinics that we have and the co-located facilities. And not only should we be celebrating that, we should be stepping it up. In fact, other jurisdictions have taken note of what King County has done in the public health arena and have actually been broadening out their brick and mortar and workforce investments and trying to figure out new reimbursement models to try to make it sustainable, which is something I support as well. Maricopa County in Arizona has decided to reclassify their public health clinics as federally qualified health centers to try to get additional reimbursement and maintain a footprint. I know that out in Shelton, their public health facilities have also now qualified one of their clinics, their WIC clinic, as a federally qualified health center to get reimbursement from the feds. We have to be thinking creatively, but there is a real model out here that we should be celebrating. And I think it's probably no secret to anybody who's been following the Beachcomber and other news sources that King County is facing a financial cliff. We are going to do everything that we can to prevent public health clinics from closing or public health services from closing. And I am optimistic that with with the partnership that we have at the state legislative level, given the outcome of session that just happened, that we have more tools and in our tool belt. But I just want to emphasize the importance of not only the upstream investments that we talked about, but maintaining that safety net in partnership with the organizations that you noted that are on the island, and really providing direct health services. And then as you noted, I think we'll talk a little bit about this as well. Not everything can be housed on the island, right? People need access to emergency care and hospitals. They need to get regular and routine care off the island, and making sure that we have accessible and reliable transportation to those services, both via the Washington State Ferry and the water taxi, has been a big priority of mine, because I heard it directly from you all on the island.
Yeah. Well, you're anticipating Amy's question, I believe.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk transit. First of all, thank you so much for your support of the water taxi bill, right? Of Representative Alvarado's $3.1 million for expanded water taxi and kind of putting the trial balloon up there for, you know, midday, weekday runs. It's something we've asked for. And, you know, I think our next goal will be to drive ridership as much as we can. And drive participation and use of that. But, you know, you sit on the regional transit committee, and, you know, we've talked transit, we've talked metro, we've talked sort of wraparound service to ferries, right? And getting more people on the foot ferry and, you know, sort of taking a little bit of the pressure off. Talk a little bit about your vision for regional transit and maybe, you know, your vision for Vashon. We've talked about alternative transit opportunities for Vashon. What kind of shapes do you feel are successful there?
Well, I think that we do have a lot to celebrate from this last legislative session. As you noted, Representative Alvarado, relatively new to the 34th. Yay, we're so happy to have you. And to be a champion for all residents in the 34th Legislative District, secured $3.17 million, right, for the water taxi. Mm-hmm. And that is a huge accomplishment. As we know, the water taxi serves a relatively small population compared to the entire state. And for her to be able to secure that in the budget is incredibly impressive. And I just want to give a huge shout out to our chairs of transportation as well. Senator Marco Elias, Representative Jake Fye have been supportive of her efforts as well. And I sent them a message thanking them as well, because they do probably have to absorb a lot of criticism of where these dollars are going relative to other needs in the state. And I can't underscore the importance of this enough, right? You and I have talked about this a lot. This is absolutely an equity issue. I think that the theme of the podcast focuses on equity and sustainability. We cannot have a sustainable economy if we don't have access to regular routine transportation across the waterways. We cannot have equity in terms of who can get in and out and to doctor's appointments and to the places that they need to go, whether it's a job or other services, without reliable transportation. And I think it's a good down payment. And also, I want to celebrate the Puget Sound Regional Council. This, I think, is one of the first years that the Puget Sound Regional Council, right, a regional body made up of elected officials, have weighed in with a united message supporting ferries. And it was a strong show of support from the PSRC for those elected members, because people across this region understand the importance of those water highways. And I will say I am proud to be the King County Council member that has all ferry services in my district, in District 8. And I will proudly champion this as a way to also improve the local economy and the equity of our entire county by making sure that the ferry services are reliable and equitable for residents on the island and those who want to get to and from. I think, Amy, part of your question as well is, you know, the why behind it. As you and I have been meeting over the last year or so, I've talked to quite a few small business owners, and I know, you know, some of you probably know this story, but it was repeated to me that there are small business shops that have incredible storefronts in the downtown core on Vashon Island. And at the peak of tourist season, some of those shops will say they're closed for the day because they don't have workers to come in. We need to be able to have reliable transportation options so that people can get back and forth to a place of employment and home in time to see their family, pick up their kid from daycare, and you can't do that with the existing ferry service. The same is true for housing, which I'm sure we'll talk about, to have the ability for more workers and small business owners to be able to live on the island. But we really have to make sure that we're investing in the transportation services, because not everybody is going to live out on the island and work out there. And back to healthcare, you know, oh boy, there's story after story, which I'm sure many of you probably know the individuals, but I'll tell one story of a person who waited overnight in the ferry line because she had a doctor's appointment that next day. And I believe it was a cancer infusion or treatment of some sort. And she could not afford to miss that ferry. So she waited with cancer in line at the ferry terminal. That is unacceptable. Unacceptable. So if we want to improve accessibility to the rest of King County, the best way for us to do that is to work quickly to deploy the resources that the state legislature allocated for the traditional water tax, for the traditional ferry services. And King County is not going to sit on its hands until that happens. And that's why I'm so glad that Representative Alvarado secured the $3.17 million so that we could accelerate and increase the frequency of the water taxi services. Having the option to take a ferry midday, I think will improve accessibility. But also, I think the other role that King County can play is deploying the small shuttles. Mm-hmm. Folks are familiar with West Seattle. You know that there is the 773 and the 775 small truncated buses that wait for you on the other side of the water taxi trip. So if you're coming from downtown, they are waiting for you there to take you to your home. They pick you up and bring you to the water taxi on time. It is not like connecting to a bus, which we appreciate that Metro is working on increasing the frequency and the reliability of Metro buses on Vashon and Murray Island. I want to applaud that. But it is different to have a water taxi that is tied to the arrival and the departure of the water taxi services. I never have to worry if I'm going to miss my connection when I take the water taxi. It is an extension of that ride and is an extension of that service. And it is a commitment that you will still get home on time, even if the water taxi is late. So we've had some good initial conversations. I've brought it up in committee. We've had some one-on-one meetings, but I think it's very clear why we would like to see small buses deployed, at least if we could pilot it. I think that, to your point, Amy, it also then shows there is a demand for ridership, and demand for ridership will yield sustainable investments if we can show that this is a needed and necessary service.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So a perfect segue into not everyone has to leave the island, but one of the issues we have, of course, here on the island is affordable housing. I know you've got a tremendous background, and we've talked about it a little bit this morning. But one of the challenges facing the folks here on the island are having workers being able to afford to live on the island and work the stores, just like you mentioned. We have waitresses and waiters that, you know, working in our restaurants and all businesses, really. We do have the Vashon household, which is fabulous here. We have a new group, Creekside Village, which is Mike Massey's vision for his area down there. He's working with Christopher Brick of the Vashon Shelter America group, and they're now moving forward with affordable housing units. But in addition to these steps, what other steps do you see for additional affordable housing here on Vashon? And what role do you expect to play in that?
Thank you for this question. And thanks to Vashon Household that you mentioned them for being such a strong champion of what the community vision is for how to build and how to build affordable housing. Amy, if I'm not wrong, I think the Chamber of Commerce has a subgroup on affordable housing as well.
The Community Council, for sure. Yes.
Oh, Community Council.
Yeah,
yes.
They are working so hard. I so admire the work they put in.
And Art Chippendale and others who've been part of that group, I've met with a handful of times as well. So looking forward to really following the direction and input from community members that have been long asking for more housing, more workforce housing, more affordable housing, more housing diversity on the island, but also doing it through sort of the vision and the vein of what the community wants, right? I think that this is a great example of where we can marry the desire for additional housing with our desire for a sustainable environment. And I know that, Kevin, you've done a lot of work on environmental justice justice work. There's a report that has recently come out about what that vision should look like and the blueprint should be. But I think this is a good opportunity to really elevate the connectedness between environmental justice and housing sustainability. If we want to protect forest lands and farmlands and wetlands from encroachment, we need to be doing a better job of utilizing the areas that we have zoned for development and increasing the ability for people to use that square footage and, if possible, some of the airspace as well. That is how we create thriving, walkable communities. I know that that has maybe a different feel and flavor on the island, but it also helps us prevent encroachment into forest lands and wetlands and farmlands that are out on the island as well. The vision of having a walkable community is absolutely possible on the island if we can increase the frequency to get to the ferry services if people need that, using either the regular metro buses or these small shuttles, increasing the transportation options, either the water taxi or the traditional Washington State ferries, and to make it possible for people to get around without having to use a vehicle. That is an incredible environmental vision, right? That's an environmental justice accomplishment if you can get people out of their vehicles. So I offer that as a way to ensure that we are thinking about housing through that environmental justice lens. One of the ways that we, I think, can strive for that in the very near future is through the comprehensive plan. The King County Executive, Executive Constantine, has transmitted his vision of what the comprehensive plan should be to council. And currently, King County Council is in the process of thinking through amendments on that comprehensive plan. I know that many people on the island have been involved in the comprehensive plan in the past, the sub-regional plans in the past. And I would say that the comprehensive plan as a standalone is a once-in-a-decade opportunity for us to try to create a vision of inclusive housing that builds the vision of how more community members can stay in place, and we can also welcome additional workers, healthcare providers, community members, kiddos to come to our schools, how we can be a welcoming community by building more accessible housing units of all kinds in certain areas of the island. Again, once in a decade opportunity. So on April 4th, there is a community forum that King County Council's central staff will be at to walk through what the executive has proposed. I will be there in person and would love to hear directly from folks about what you'd like to see. There's a few things that stand out to me, and of course, I'd love to hear more from you all as well as we meet. But as we know, there have been some proposals in the past to try to create affordable housing or inclusionary housing. And some of those were listed as demonstration projects. I think even though some of the demonstration projects might not have materialized in the last 10 years, we shouldn't throw out the desire to see more affordable housing or inclusionary housing. We should be asking what more we can do. Why didn't it pencil out? Remembering that the private market largely does not create affordable housing from 0% of the area median income to 60% of the area median income, right? That's largely not the population that the market traditionally focuses on. So we have to think about what tools government has to incentivize the creation of affordable units, remembering that government also doesn't do the direct construction of affordable housing typically. So trying to figure out that right balance and make sure that it pencils out for nonprofit developers, for those who are trying to create inclusionary housing, mixed income housing. I think there's a huge question for me about whether or not the proposal that we received strikes the right balance and what more we want to do to try to really create more workforce housing. Again, these could be workers who are working in small businesses, who are working at the healthcare services that we talked about, and they could be more done, I think, in this stage to create more affordable housing. So those are some of the questions that I'll be looking for. We can't just be creating more business spaces without the ability to create more housing for those workers as well.
And I will say, jump in real quick, just from, I do sit on the affordable housing group with the Vashon Mori Community Council, and we've had some great conversations about the comprehensive plan. And I think there's really great opportunity to expand beyond the comprehensive plan, which for Vashon right now sort of primarily focuses on some zoning changes, and to take to take the opportunity to look at zoning changes and then really create a plan for development, right? Because the comp plan really is coming at it from a policy perspective. And right now it feels like there's a disconnect between folks who are, you know, very policy oriented and understand affordable housing and sort of the understanding of the need for density and how density is really sort of a core piece of bringing affordable housing in, and a community desire for no density, right? So I think there's bridges to be built, and I think some planning to be done. And for us on the Affordable Housing Committee, it's felt more that the comp plan is not so much a comp plan, but a policy starting point to launch and develop a comp plan. So many, many conversations to be had.
You know, and you mentioned one thing that brings to mind. You said that the, you know, government does not build the houses themselves, but they promote and allow that. And one of the things that happens is, as you're building those, you've got a whole workforce that's working to build those things. So it's building the economy, you know, the local economy in that process. So it's a double-edged sword. I mean, it helps on both sides of the equation.
Yeah, it could be a win-win, right?
Exactly.
You could have
exactly.
It could be a multiplier effect. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
excellent. All right. Well, hey, I'm glad people were able to jump into that super important topic. Teresa,
can I add one more thing, Kevin?
Absolutely. Yes.
Again, I just want to appreciate the folks who've been involved in really the policy weeds of this discussion for a long time. And I will acknowledge, for people who are listening, whose eyes are glazing over as we talk about the comp plan, this is alphabet soup at its worst, right? You have to have a glossary of terms to follow some of the presentations that are happening. And I want to make sure that we're not only creating inclusionary housing, but that we're creating an inclusionary conversation. So I really encourage people, if you're interested in learning more and weighing in, that April 4th meeting is going to be very helpful for understanding what some of the community ideas and vision are. You don't have to know this alphabet soup and all the acronyms and abbreviations. We want to know what the vision is that people would like to see. If there's certain corridors where you think we could absorb more housing, or hey, maybe instead of commercial here, if we can do mixed use, or if there's other types of services that you'd like to see, you know, how we can maybe incentivize the creation of additional childcare or plaza or gathering space. Some of the things that I've been hearing about while I'm on the island would be very helpful to hear. And then again, to the very small businesses that we've talked to, just recognizing, if we're going to create economic stability for those business owners, we do have to create a reliable and accessible workforce. So that's something that, if that resonates with you, just know that you don't need to know all of those terms. And we are very interested in hearing your feedback on what's been proposed. I like the starting point angle that Amy noted, and building from that is going to be very helpful.
Can you once again tell us where and when the meeting is? It's April 4th.
Yeah. It is going to be on April 4th. I remembered 4-4. It's going to be in the evening. That's Thursday. And it's going to be at the Vashon Center for the Arts. So if you are able to come, the time is 5:30 p.m. Vashon Center for the Arts on 4-4, April 4th.
Perfect. Thank you.
Awesome. Yes. Teresa, I'm sure, as you know, just this morning, we had the opportunity to meet with your chief of staff, Aaron House, to discuss climate concerns, which, as you also know, is a high priority for Islanders. What is your current thinking about how our voice on Vashon Mare Island might be aligned with and amplified through working with regional organizers like the King County Cities Climate Collaborative, which is known as the K4C. I know we had a great discussion with Aaron about options. What's anything come to your mind particularly you want to share with us today?
Yeah, thank you so much. And I'll also mention that this came up in our conversations last year as well. People who were very concerned about Vashon and Mare Island being left out of the K4C conversations. So that's one of the first conversations that we initiated as well, recognizing that C traditionally means cities. But here, I think it needs to mean community. The Vashon community needs to be part of the K4C conversation. I'm really inspired by the organizing and advocacy that you have done, Kevin, and the community that's been gathering for years around climate change. And I think we have to acknowledge that Vashon has unique needs. There is no other greater example of that than last year having, there is no greater example of that than last year having the connective bridge between Vashon and Maury Island cut off because the road was impassable due to the king tide and the impacts of climate change. That is a great example of why King County should be really welcoming Vashon and Maury Island to sit at the K4C. I love that our team has been involved and connected with you all already. We have also met with the K4C staff to relay that there is, you know, early interest in amplifying Vashon's perspective around the need for climate change mitigation policies. And we have heard an interest in collaboration from the executive, which I'm really thrilled about. A few ideas that emerged from the discussion so far are to better incorporate not just Vashon, but some more of the unincorporated community perspectives and needs. There is clearly an impact on the community overall, but especially the areas that have seen floods, whether it's rivers in unincorporated areas or floods and the impacts of king tides around Vashon, you all have a direct experience of being on the front line of climate change and need to have a seat there. We are also interested in a regular roundtable discussion, bringing in unincorporated community leaders with K4C to make sure that we are not just sharing ideas, which the K4C body is for, but to help strategize and hear what resources are needed and what community challenges exist. There is also an elected officials K4C climate summit twice a year that I will be attending, and with the specific lens of bringing the Vashon Island and White Center perspectives from District 8, those are the two unincorporated areas in this district, and make sure that we are prioritizing climate change for residents who live in unincorporated areas. And I think that you all have been on the front line of providing the data, really showing, as I said, the blueprint. That is, I think, literally the words that you used in the past, Kevin, to explain where we should be going, to really talk about how we can be tracking progress and not just using lip service, right? Mm-hmm. But what are the key metrics to reduce carbon emissions and to make notable progress in the immediate. I understand that the King County Climate Action Plan doesn't fully reflect the unique needs and opportunities on Vashon. For instance, it doesn't currently address ferries, which of course is central to Vashon's transportation system and also an emitter of greenhouse gas gases. But the ways in which the state legislature has stepped up on that this year will help a lot. And I just would end by saying climate resilience is also about ensuring that we have a sustainable community for the future. You know, we're talking about building more housing, increasing transportation options. We need to be thinking about the lasting sustainability of the island as a whole, and we can't do that without thinking about and centering our conversations around climate justice as well. I would also note that the Washington State Legislature did make some investments in trying to address the emissions and making it more possible for there to be greener options as we think about the ferry services in the future. I would argue that getting people out of their cars and onto the water taxi is one of the best green strategies we can do for transportation related to the water services. So yeah, water taxi is a green option.
We're hoping for more Des Moines service too, right? If we can get that water taxi mosquito fleet going, get over to Kitsap, get over to Des Moines, right? Yeah.
Now we're talking.
That's what I'm talking about.
You mentioned tools on the tool belt. So here we go. Teresa, I want to really appreciate the fact that not only the following up on that particular issue, which we raised as during the campaign, and the follow through with you and your staff to really address those issues that you've been discovering. I want to make sure people know that they can continue this conversation with you by going to the Vashon Maury Community Council meeting, 7 p.m. Thursday, March 21st. So it's the couple weeks away, but you will be attending the Vashon Maury Community Council meeting. People can Zoom in or they can join you at the Land Trust to have that conversation and basically to stay apprised of the work that you're doing. I'm torn between any last comments, Teresa, about how folks can connect with your staff to make sure that their voices are heard?
Well, thank you again for reaching out. Please do email me directly, teresa.mosqueda@kingcounty.gov. You will find as well our entire team listed on our website. Aaron House is our chief of staff, lead on all things environmental justice and transportation. Chris Lampkin is deputy chief of staff, lead on all things economic justice, workers and small businesses, and community connections. Camila Brown is our chief operating officer and lead on special projects. You might know her name from the work that Larry Gossett did, and she is accessible, as well as Melanie Cray, lead on all things public safety and infrastructure. So please reach out anytime.
All right. Thank you. Now, Amy, before we just with a minute left, we're going to follow up with you next time on any comments you have about National Women's History Month. But perhaps you want to mention briefly the activities coming up at the garden show.
That's right. We've got the Home and Garden Fair from 11 to 2 at Vashon High School. Some 20 vendors will be on hand, contractors, electricians, solar panel, landscaping, free popcorn, anything and everything you could want. Aggie's is going to be there with the best egg sandwiches on Vashon. So Vashon High School, 11 to 2, come on down.
Where else would you want to be? And also, just to sign off, Teresa, Amy, Craig, Truman, Bruce, and me, thank you so much, listeners, for being on the Brown Briefly. Craig, you've got somebody lined up to come and talk with us next week. Who might that be?
Real briefly, we have Amanda Knox and her husband, Christopher Robinson. They will be here talking about the Italian criminal justice, I use the term maybe loosely, system, and her work with the Innocence Project and her upcoming miniseries. So that will be the case.
Okay, see you all next week.
Thank you.
Wonderful.